Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Blue Shirt Banner Radio on Blog Talk Radio. This is Jim Schmiedeberg. I am your host and I am joined by always by with Joe Fortunato. Joe, are you there?
I'm there. How are you?
Good evening. How are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. A couple of things going on. Today is Wednesday, July 29th, and we are, I guess, just about 6 weeks away from training camp. So we are officially in the doldrums of the off season, I guess you could say. We're we're past the draft. The trades have died down. The free agency has died down. So now we're just trying to bide our time and get through to training camp. But you guys stick with us. We'll keep you entertained right up until training camp starts, and then we'll have all that good stuff to talk about. So tonight we are going to continue our discussion that we started last week regarding some of the infamous Rangers players that have played for the Rangers, maybe some guys you hated, some guys who didn't do well when they played for the Rangers, or just a few obscure names. We had a lot of those last week from the mouth, and a few of the callers had some great names that we came up with. So we'll get into that in a little while, and we're going to be joined again by Steve from nyrangerscast.com. He should be checking in with us soon. We are hoping to be joined by the mouth. He is in an airport somewhere in the, I'm not sure where, somewhere in the Midwest, I believe. And last we heard, his flight was delayed. So he was hoping to be able to check in with us. So we'll get into that in a little while. And before we get started, because I forgot to do this last week, we want to give a shout-out to one of our readers, one of our frequent posters, Poe678, who, for those of you that don't know, he is stationed over in Iraq, keeping us safe, and we just want to say hello to him. Hope you're doing well, and come home safe, buddy. So, Joe, not much news this week, just a few minor things, but why don't we start with Nikolai Zverev. Even though we've beat this topic to death, his arbitration is Friday. Is that correct?
I think you're right.
Okay. The word we're hearing is that. Well, I should preface this. The word came from Larry Brooks. It was in the New York Post over the weekend. Zverev is expected to ask for $4.5 million, and according to Larry, the arbitration award will probably come somewhere between 3.85 and 4.15. And according to Larry Brooks, if that is the number that Zverev is awarded, that the Rangers are going to walk away from the table. Joe, I know you've been waving the Zverev banner all offseason, and you and I talked about it briefly today, but I wanted to touch on it again. Is there a chance, is it even a possibility, I don't pretend to fully understand how all of this works, is there a chance the Rangers could accept that arbitration award, sign Zhirinov to that contract, and then turn around and trade him anyway?
I'm pretty sure they can. I think that the only thing that happens with an arbitration is if you are signed to a one-year deal because of arbitration, you cannot, I remember with Lundqvist, they had to wait till January to renegotiate his contract. I think that's the only, barring feature for arbitration. I could be wrong, but I think Lottie Broach is probably right. They're probably Zhirinov's camp will probably ask for $4.5 million, and he will not receive $4.5 million. I could see him receiving $4 million. I could also see him receiving as low as, $3.5 million because of his playoff status. But again, I'm not sure. If his contract is at or below $4 million, I think the Rangers should 100% look into signing him to that deal. Because remember, in the offseason, you can go 10% over the cap until the day that the season starts. So the Rangers can go, if the cap is $55 million, say they can go probably close to a little bit over $60 million. They can do that, and then they can try to trade him somewhere else. I mean, if you walk away from an arbitration deal like Larry Brooks is saying, Zhirinov becomes an unrestricted free agent, he walks for nothing. I mean, I don't see how that would benefit the Rangers in any way. I think that if they, sign him to a one-year, $4 million deal, or even a $4.5 million deal, although, again, that's stretching it, some team will give up something for him. Even if it's a sixth or a seventh round draft pick, it is more than what they would have walked away with. And for a team maybe looking to hit the cap ceiling or the cap floor, or a team looking for some secondary scoring, a one-year deal out of Zhirinov would not be the worst thing in the world. Again, I really hope by some miracle they keep him, and if they don't, I at least want them to get something for him. Because otherwise, then we lost two for nothing is basically what it comes down to.
Right, right. You're absolutely right. What is the estimated cap number at this point? I know you went over it the other day, and I don't remember what the number was that you gave us. Were they at around 50? Was it 50 or 52 million?
We had about $3 million worth of cap space, with the assumption that Dubinsky signs a $2 million deal. And
okay,
also
and
assuming that Anisimov and Byers make the team. So there's three real assumptions there, but we can assume that the Rangers are within the realm of $2 to $3 million worth of space.
Okay, and that's with Voros' salary on the cap as well, which is in the $1.5 million range, I believe.
Well, him and Rissmiller, I think if they start the year in the AHL, I'm pretty sure they don't count against the cap, do they?
No.
Well,
I just didn't know if that number you were giving me has them on the roster or if that's counting them being
no,
in the
it
AHL.
No, what my roster was everyone you'd think without Voros and Rissmiller, and just put in Sanguinetti on defense, Anisimov and Byers as forwards. And then
okay.
Anyone else, Kotalik is there, obviously, Gabrick is there. Everyone else, and I also assume that Dubinsky would sign a $2 million deal. So we really can assume that at the end of the day, the Rangers will have about $3 million of space to play with.
Okay. I just want to say hi to Froze99, who's listening to us and participating in the chat room. His suggestion is to sign Zhirinov and then trade him and then sign Peter Sikora. I've been on the Sikora bandwagon most of the offseason. I think he'd be an affordable winger and a bonus on the power play if the Rangers could find a way to fit him under the cap. Sikora, I know he had the first run with the Rangers and wasn't terribly effective, but I believe he wasn't completely healthy at the time. I think he had 13 power play goals last year. I don't think anybody on the Rangers had 13 power play goals. So I think he would be a big help if they could bring him in. But we'll see. We should have a better idea what's going on in about 48 hours from now.
Well, I mean, what people also have to realize is that the Rangers need to keep a certain level of cap space for the trade deadline. And I know that it's really far away and no one wants to think about it right now, but at the trade deadline around February, we're going to be looking probably, hopefully gearing up for a deep playoff run. And I would have no problem with signing Peter Sikora to a, you know, 1 year, $3 million deal like he wants, but then the Rangers need to clear space to, you know, make moves in the future. It's not just about filling this cap ceiling. I mean, they need to keep their options free. I mean, you know, what if, say, Kovalchuk opens up in the middle of the year for a trade and the Rangers want to trade for him? You want that extra cap space. So I kind of don't see them making a move at this point.
Right. Let me give out the number, 646-478-4692. If you guys want to call in and give us your thoughts on what's going on with the Rangers. And don't forget, in just a little while, about a half hour or so, we're going to open up the Blue Shirt Banter Roundtable again to talk about some of the former Rangers that maybe weren't so quite so famous. And Froze99, I just want to make one more comment to you. He said that Sikora loved being a Ranger, and I just wanted to tell they all love being Rangers, Frozy, because the Rangers pay well. you always love where you're working when you're paid very well or occasionally overpaid. So all right. So as far as Yerdev goes, we'll know soon what's going to go on, and then finally, one way or the other, we could put it to rest. I'll be glad to be ready to move on from Yerdev one way or the other. The Rangers also, they signed another young defenseman. I think this makes 52. Young defenseman that they've signed since the end of the season, 52 or 53, I forget the number, but it's his name is Sam Klassen or Klassen. He's a WHL player from the Saskatoon Blades. I think he's 21 years old. Not a big defenseman, not what you'd consider a big defenseman. He's 6'1", 190 pounds. But Joe, when you and I were researching this guy before we put it up on BlueShirtBanter.com. We were pretty amazed at the video we were seeing. This kid's got a mean streak in him that is interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, there's various videos of him just pummeling people, in the midst of games. And if you look hard enough, you can see some hit videos that people have put up of some of the hits he's made. His positioning on some of the videos I've seen has been perfect. And, I mean, obviously there's a humongous jump between the WHL and the NHL, but I am pretty excited to see how he fares in Hartford this season because he seems like he is one of those big, bone-crushing defensemen that Ranger fans pine for. So, I mean, again, you know, like I said, after the draft, I'll let you know how this goes in a couple of years. But for now, it looks like it's a pretty good move by Glenn Sather.
I'll tell you what, assuming that, I don't know what training camp is like, but picturing it like summer camp, you know, you go away to summer camp and you all eat together in a dining hall. If there's a set table for the offense and a set table for the defense, they're going to need three or four tables for defense with all these guys the Rangers are bringing in. I don't know where they're all going to sit. Where are they all going to sleep? They're going to have triple bunks.
There's a lot of them. I mean, you'd have to think that Glenn Sather may have a trade brewing, perhaps, or, you know, there's just too many defensemen to think that we're going to sit pat. And you never know. Maybe he has something brewing. Maybe he has a trade going. But for right now, we are pretty set defensively for the next 12 to 13 years.
At least. I mean, they've got enough defensemen right now to fill the Rangers roster, the Wolfpack roster, the Brampton Battalion, and I think the Brick Township, Brick New Jersey Dragons hockey team. Plenty of defensemen. There's going to be a lot of should be interesting competition, I think, between all these young defensemen. But so yeah, that was that was really the only big news of the only I don't even know if that classifies as big news, but that was the only real move the Rangers made this week. And the only other thing that I really wanted to talk about, and we wanted to get into this for the last couple of weeks now, because now it's kind of a little bit old news, but we'll talk about it anyway. We've just gotten into so many other things the last few weeks, there wasn't time to talk about the schedule for this year that was announced a few weeks ago. The Rangers 2009-2010 schedule, as you may or may not remember, the Olympics are in 2010 in Vancouver, so the league will be shutting down for a little over 2 weeks. There's no All-Star game this year because of the Olympics. And because of the Olympics, the schedule is very compressed. I don't recall seeing a lot of the 3 and 4 day stretches, sometimes 5 days with no games that you usually see during the season. This year, it seems to me like the Rangers are playing almost every other day, Joe.
About the New York Rangers schedule is that every year we seem to play more games than any other team. And it just always seems to be like that. Other teams always seem to have games in hand or whatever. I think that the schedule is pretty typical for an Olympic schedule. The Olympics takes an unbelievable toll on the teams, especially for the players involved. Because like you said, you know, the schedule's compressed. And then if you're not playing in the Olympics, you have a two-week break from hockey. And if you are playing in the Olympics, you have another 2 weeks of hockey. And, you know, we as Ranger fans are very familiar with what this can do, because if you care to remember the year after the lockout, Lundqvist ran out of gas after the Olympics. He played great. He led Sweden to a gold medal. And the next thing you know, he's tired. He's not playing well. And, you know, it's a big factor, especially in the playoffs, and they ended up getting swept. I can't tell you I'm not nervous about a situation like that, especially since, if you look at all the Rangers' money guys being, Lundqvist now, Marion Gaborik, you'd think Drury would be, and Callahan and Dubinsky are going to find themselves on the USA team. You'd have to think that all of our money guys are going to be in the Olympics, and it may take a serious toll on this team in the future. And I'm curious to see how John Tortorella, who's also coaching Team USA, I think he's an assistant coach, will handle that. I mean, we're going to be busy.
Yeah, definitely. I think Steve Valiquette is going to be a very important part of this team, because they're going to have to find, between the 2 weeks off for the Olympics that Henrik Lundqvist is going to be playing. I mean, you got to figure that he's going to play probably. I don't remember I think it was 6 or 7 games he played when he led Sweden to the gold medal, and he was absolutely incredible in those Olympics. But so you figure over that 2 week span, he's going to play an extra 6 or 7 games. The Rangers are going to have to find a way to get him plenty of rest with these games every other day at some point, and there's a lot of there's a few back-to-back nights where they're going to play. I would think Valiquette is probably going to have to be ready to play maybe 20 games, 20 to 25 games this year. I don't know your thoughts on that, but the Rangers should, you know, I mean, let's face it, there's nobody more valuable on that team than Lundqvist, and they can't afford to go into the playoffs with him not at 100%.
Yeah, I think that's definitely 20 games is probably a fair assumption for Valiquette, especially because Lundqvist, the Rangers have ridden Lundqvist the past 2 years. He's played, I think, 70 games both years. But it's definitely going to be important. There's a part of me that hopes Lundqvist skips the Olympics, but I know it's not going to happen. But, I mean, at the end of the day, Valiquette is definitely one of the best backup goaltenders in the league. He's primed for position like this. He did fantastic last year and the year before with stepping in when he needed, you know, to give Lundqvist a break. But, you know, it's overlooked that a backup goaltender could be important, but with this Olympic schedule, Valiquette, I agree with you, is going to become very important, and I could definitely see him starting, you know, 3 or 4 games in a row after the Olympics are over just to give Lundqvist a breather. And, you know, hopefully the Rangers are in such good shape that, you know, they can lose those four games. But, you know, odds are that these were going to be very competitive games. And I have no problem with Valiquette being there.
No, he's a solid backup. And you're right. The backup goaltender is a very important position, especially this season. And that's why the Islanders are so astute in the front office. I mean, they've signed five backup goaltenders. They are just going to have a slew of black backup goaltenders, and they'll be the freshest ones in the league. And when they have 20 wins in April, they'll know it's because of their solid backup goaltending that got them through.
I think that Valiquette has always been an important part to this team, and it's, you know, his role is only going to be expanded because of the Olympics, which is good. I have no problem giving him that responsibility. He's shown that he can handle it.
I'm just reading, looking at it on the chat room here, and we have there's someone in the chat room, and their name is, I can't read this, Clalicata 17. And he's asking the question, what happens in 4 years if we're a legitimate contender? Would he head to the Olympics again and risk running out of gas? And my argument to that is, well, we're a legitimate contender now, damn it. And he'll still go to the Olympics. But no, I'm just kidding. Well,
I think Lundqvist has that competitive nature in him he'll definitely go to the Olympics. I mean, if you look at last Olympics, there was no team more competitive than we were. We were atop the Atlantic Division, cruising towards 100 points. It was only an after-Olympic meltdown that caused us to go into the playoffs reeling. But up to the Olympics 4 years ago, we were one of the hottest teams in the league. And after we went to the Olympics, we spiraled downhill, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, they wound up getting bounced pretty bad fashion to the Newark Devils. But we got another comment from Froze, Isles and KC by 2011. Did you see Puck Daddy? Somebody sent in the KC Islanders jersey. Did you see that today?
I did see it.
It was pretty funny. What was it? The KC Nolanders?
Drylanders. No, the Drylanders.
Drylanders, that's what it was. Okay, Kansas City Drylanders. That was great. I hope that was a Ranger fan that came up with that. I like to think that it was somebody clever like that. But getting back to the schedule, beyond the compressed games and everything, the Rangers home opener, or excuse me, the Rangers season opener is Friday, October 2nd in Pittsburgh. I assume that game will probably be on Versus. So if I were you, I'd start looking for whatever channel Versus is now, and you might find it by then. And then the following night, Marian Gaborik will make his Madison Square Garden debut against the Ottawa Senators with or without Danny Heatley. That remains to be seen. Speaking of the Drylanders, the debut of John Tavares at MSG will be December 16th. And former Ranger Scott Gomez will return to the Garden as a member of the Montreal Canadiens in January. That'll be on the 17th. And to me, the thing that stuck out in the schedule, seven of the last nine games of the season for the Rangers are on the road. Now, it's not a huge road trip. It's not like they're going to go to Vancouver and Calgary and Edmonton, but it still makes a difference when you're not playing in your home building. I think there's a couple of games against Jersey in there, and there's a home and home to end the season with the Flyers, which seems like the Rangers do every year. It's mostly traveling around the Northeast, but it's still not the same as being at home and playing in your own building. So I think I really hope that those last nine games, when the Rangers get to that stretch, I really hope they're not desperate.
Well, yeah, it would definitely be bad if it was the same way it was this season, which was they were coming into the home and home with the Flyers, needing a win to secure a playoff spot. But I think that, you know, the Rangers' schedule is almost favorable in that if the last seven of nine games are away, then they'll play more games at home in the first half of the year. So hopefully they'll get off to a really good start and maybe not need those games as much, but, you know, sports isn't scripted for a reason. No one can do it. And, you know, I just think that at the end of the day, the Rangers are going to have to grind out a really tough schedule that they've been given. And, you know, I mean, it starts off with a back-to-back games, one in Pittsburgh and one in New York. And I saw that and I was like, oh, here we go again. So, you know, schedules are tough for every team, but hopefully we can pull through it.
And if I'm not mistaken, training camp, like I said before, opens up September 12th, and the Rangers have a six or seven game preseason schedule, and then the season starts October 2nd. So you've got less than 3 weeks of training camp, seven games in those 3 weeks, and then you get right into it. It's not like it's not like baseball where you have a month and a half of spring training to get ready, and then you start the season, or football where you have, you know, 6 weeks of training camp before the season starts. Hockey, they get right into it. So
yeah, the Rangers
better show up to camp in shape. That's all I'm saying.
And I mean, nothing could be worse than last year's little Europe trip. And don't forget, the Rangers went to Canada a couple of times before that Euro trip for the preseason games. I think they went out to play, you know, Ottawa at Ottawa, and they moved all around the country. And then they went on that trip to start off the season, and I thought that was going to take an unbelievable physical toll on them, especially because we had Naslund, we were a much older team, but they came out, you know, they came out firing. And they went 10-2 and I think won the first 13 games of the season. So they've shown that they can succeed in a difficult schedule and a tough start, which is something they have this year. And I hope they can show the same success.
The preseason schedule, it's seven games. Training camp starts with the players reporting to New York for physical testing at Madison Square Garden on Saturday, September 12th. I'm reading this right off the Rangers website. So September 12th, they start camp, and the first game, that's Saturday, and Tuesday is the first game at home in Boston, against Boston. And the furthest trip they have to make is Detroit in the preseason. And so that's good. Then the rest of it's just mostly in the Northeast, a trip down to Washington for the last preseason game on Sunday, September 27th, and then, like I said, the season starts just a couple of days after that. So, we want to get you guys in here on some phone calls. Phone number 646-478-4692. We're waiting for Steve to join us from nyrangerscast.com, and we're going to talk about some older Rangers. And we got the chat rooms full. If you guys want to call in, by all means, do. And that's it. So we have no calls on the line right now, Joe.
That's pretty surprising.
That is surprising.
I guess
we've had calls every week. We've had calls at the very beginning. Maybe the novelty's dying, Joe. Maybe we're being canceled.
Maybe we are being canceled, and we just don't know it. I guess the only thing that I'll say is that, you know, for as bad as the schedule tends to look, they should at least be used to it by now. And, you know, the NHL season is a grind, and it always has been, and especially if you win the Stanley Cup, because it's a whole extra 2 months of hockey at the end of the regular season. So, you know, John Tortorella's motto is you need to come in shape, you need to be in shape, you know, this is going to be the toughest training camp of your life. And for a schedule like this, I'm glad he came in early, because we saw last year what could happen when players are out of shape, and hopefully they come in shape enough to take care of the schedule. And if I'm going to put any coach at the helm, it will be John Tortorella.
Well, I think it was maybe after his second or third game as Rangers coach that he was complaining about the conditioning of the team. So that is something that I think I think is definitely very near the top of the list of things he's going to look to correct once the Rangers hit training camp. All right, we got a call on the line, 646 area code.
Hello?
You're on Blue Shirt Band of Radio with Jim and Joe. Who's this?
It's Steve from Brooklyn.
Hey,
hi,
guys.
Steve from Brooklyn. How are you? You're on with Jim and Joe. What's how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. I was just thinking. I was like, you know, I think that we should like try to move Roosevelt to clear up some cap room so that we could like, you know, get Stoll next year. I was thinking maybe we should like try to get him over to like the Panthers or someone, like a team looking for a defenseman. But I don't know because he's a pretty good player. What do you guys think?
Well, like I've said a couple of times, when it comes to moving defensemen, the two big names are Redden and Roosevelt, and Roosevelt is the more movable contract. Unfortunately, out of the two, I'd rather have Roosevelt. He has a great shot from the point when he uses it. He can quarterback a power play, and he was injured for the, you know, the start of the beginning half of last year. I'd have to say that I'm sure Glenn Sather's looked into it, and if the Rangers need cap space, Roosevelt's probably the way to go. But for the moment, I'm pretty sure he's going to wear Ranger blue next year. But, I mean, again, unless you're putting Redden in the minors, you're not going to make up cap space there. And I don't think it's a mistake that, you know, Sandy's going to rectify without giving Tortorella a chance at him. But for now, I don't see Roosevelt moving. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Jim?
I don't think he's going anywhere. And quite frankly, I wouldn't move him right now.
Yeah, neither
right
would
now. I think he'll come into camp healthy. I think he'll be in better shape than he was last year. And when he's healthy, he's a top four defenseman. He can move the puck well. He's proven to be solid on the power play. And you know, I don't have a problem with him coming back. And I think he should be back. I'm more than willing to give him another chance. What other options are out there anyway? I mean, at this point, I don't think the Rangers are going to be able to make a trade that brings back anybody that's better than Roosevelt. And they're certainly not going to give his spot, which is, you know, either on the first or second defensive line, they're not going to turn that over to one of these young kids, one of the 52 aforementioned defensive prospects that will be in camp. You know, so really, when you consider your options, I think they're okay. I think they could do a lot worse than Roosevelt. Let me put it that way. Steve,
yeah.
are you a member of our site?
No, I've checked it out a couple of times. You know, I've been like trying to find out a lot about the Rangers, and yeah, just started like paying attention to it daily.
Okay. Well, feel free to sign up and join the conversations. We'd love to have you, and we're gonna let you go, and I hope you call again and visit us on the site. We're gonna get to some other calls.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Thanks. Go Rangers.
Thanks for calling in.
No,
and
no,
we are joined by Steve from nyrangerscast.com. Steve, good evening. How are you?
Good evening to you. How are you guys?
Good, Steve.
Good.
How are you doing?
I apologize, by the way, Jim, that I've missed your calls the last two nights. We'll get in touch at some point here.
That's okay. Lots of people see my number on their caller ID and don't answer their phone. I'm used to it. We have a before we start talking about some of our Ranger players. We have one other call on the line that I don't recognize the number, and I'm wondering if maybe it could be the mouth on a cell phone. 718-225. You're on Blue Shirt Banner Radio with Jim and Joe and Steve. Who's this?
This is Stan.
Stan from Bayside, how are you, Stan?
Yes, the one and only. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good to hear from you.
I thought there was a chance because I know he lives out on the island, so I thought maybe this could be him on a cell phone, but apparently he's still trapped in an airport somewhere. But anyway, Stan, how are you? It's good to hear from you again. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the Ranger defense. If you remember some of our previous calls, I would like to see Redden sent to somewhere in the Yukon. The only problem is that right now, the Rangers have four experienced defensemen, Redden, Roosevelt, Girardi, and Stoll. Now, I also mentioned, I think, you know, Gilroy will make the team unless he, you know, breaks a leg in training camp or something. And the way you look at it, Gilroy's a rookie. They'll probably have to play at least another couple of rookies. And they really can't get rid of one of these guys, or else they're going to be playing, you know, two, three rookies a night, which is very hard to do and be successful, especially, you know, with Pittsburgh and Philly and some of those teams coming in all the time. So they would have to bring in another experienced defenseman at least.
Yeah, I think, like we've said from the beginning, there Glenn Sather knows he made a mistake with the length and the amount on the Redden contract, but he's not willing to, you know, admit that mistake by sending Redden to the minors, at least not yet. I think Redden has at least one more season left in him from an experimental point of view where he's going to be under the microscope. But I completely agree with you that another reason why he's not going anywhere is because you don't want – I would not feel comfortable with three rookies on the blue line. And I think that re-signing Mara to a one-year deal would have – you know, and then you could waive Redden, but obviously Mara's in Montreal. So I agree. I think that, you know, you need Redden, you need Roosevelt. For whatever you say, they are at least they're experienced defensemen, if nothing else. And, you know, I think that starting the blue line with two rookies is probably enough. I mean, Jim, your thoughts?
Well, I've kind of thought all along that the Rangers might try and find a veteran defenseman, somebody that would come reasonably inexpensive. And I'm only using him as an example. I certainly wouldn't want him to come back to the Rangers, but I'm using him as an example. Jason Strudwick, that type of guy. Well, I know. I'm not saying.
You know, it's Strudwick or Chris Chelios. You can take your pick.
No, not Chelios. God, no. But a Strudwick-type guy, just a veteran defenseman who's like a sixth or seventh guy that won't come expensive and can fill in when the Rangers, you know, in spots when the Rangers need him. Whether or not that's their thinking, I don't know, but that's probably what I would like to see them do. But Strudwick, thankfully, has signed. I forget who he signed with, Edmonton?
Whalers.
Or
Edmonton.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it wouldn't be him. But I'm just that type of guy, a sixth or seventh defenseman, you know, that can fill in as necessary. But, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, we may see two rookies on defense. Hopefully not. I don't think more than that. But you know, we want a youth movement. This is how you got to get it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Steve, what do you think?
I mean, I don't think – I agree that I don't think you're going to see three rookies on the blue line, although I could see a scenario hypothetically where they use Corey Potter as that seventh defenseman, where they feel that he's ready to kind of fill in on that role, but they want to give, you know, one of the younger guys, as in a Sanguinetti or even a Delzato, although I don't think that this is going to be his year, an opportunity to win a spot on the blue line. You know, I think that they're stuck with Redden and Roosevelt this year. I personally like Michael Roosevelt. I think he's a little overpriced, but I'm not one of those people that thinks that Roosevelt doesn't have a purpose. And I think you got to hope as Ranger fans that Wade Redden can play the way he kind of played under Tortorella last year. I don't think he's ever going to live up to that contract. But if you remember, once Tortorella came in, he wasn't as big of a defensive liability as he was under Tom Rennie. So hopefully, you know, he can turn it around a little bit more this season, and they can at least get something serviceable out of him, you know, this year, and then we'll see what happens next season.
Well, I think, like Joe mentioned last week, Redden's specialty is as a puck moving defenseman, which I think is better suited for John Tortorella's style of play than it was Tom Reddy's style of play, which is why we saw the improvement under Tortorella. After he took over as coach, I'm hoping that will continue into this season. And no, but in all honesty, that contract that he has, how many defensemen in the league could actually live up to that contract? There aren't a whole lot. I mean, he's paid a criminal amount of money.
Yeah,
I mean,
very
just not the only way.
I will say this: if he does not perform this season, they'll give him another shot this year. But if he doesn't perform this season, I think that they very well might eat that contract next year and either shove him in the AHL or waive him if they can't get a trading partner. This is, and it's been made clear to Redden, from what I've heard anyway, that, you know, he's got a shot this season, but if he doesn't perform, then, you know, that might be it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they're certainly they're never going to buy that contract out. They're just going to the only solution would ever be to bury him in the minors and just pay him off and that would be the end of it. Stan, any other thoughts from you tonight?
Just one thing. You guys are talking about bad Rangers like you were last week.
Who do you got?
You mentioned him briefly just in passing last week, but has to be one of the worst players I've ever seen in my life, Igor Ulanov.
Igor Ulanov, yeah, that was a good. I think Mouth brought him up. He was just a couple of years ago with the Rangers, and they gave him a. He was another one that I seem to remember had a pretty was paid a pretty decent amount of money. He was kind of a journeyman defenseman, bounced around the league, played for a lot of different teams, and the Rangers were able to
two things. He used to always put the puck on the other team's stick, and then have to take a penalty to try to make up for it. It was horrid. It was as bad as I've ever seen.
Yeah, Ulanov, that was another that was another bad move by the front office. I'll give you that one. Played for Winnipeg, and he was with the Coyotes for a while, and I think he finished up with the Panthers, and if I'm not mistaken, then he headed for Russia.
Hopefully he's bought Siberia.
Yeah, he's in the KHL. He's with the Minsk Dynamo. Just finished the season with them. So there you go, Igor Ulanov. That's a good one. All right, Stan, thank you very much for your call, as always.
All right, take care. Have a good night.
All right, you too. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Stan from Bayside. He's one of our usually he calls almost every week. So anyway, let's now that we have Steve on the phone, nyrangerscast.com. You guys probably saw the interview they did with Artem Anisimov over the weekend, and you guys were able to get some good questions on him. It was interesting to see what he's doing to stay in shape.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when I talked to him, I talked to him about a month ago. And we were trying to figure this out, and you know, the basis of our site obviously is the podcast, NY Rangers Cast. So we wanted to do a phone interview, but he's over in Russia, and on top of that, he's not 100% comfortable with his English. So what we decided to do is that we'd send him an email with just, you know, five or six questions, just kind of getting a perspective on what these guys do in the off season, because you know that they train, but it's kind of interesting to see how they train and how they get ready. And so, you know, funny story that I sent the questions in English, and then he sends me an email back, and he says, you know, hi, Stephen, here are the answers that I have. Unfortunately, it was much more comfortable for me to do them in Russian, so they're all in Russian. So I look at these answers, and there are these, you know, figures, and I have no idea what I'm reading. So I spent about 4 days finding a Russian translator, but eventually was able to figure out what he said and get that up.
That's pretty funny. I was wondering about that when I saw you guys. I was wondering if how that went, if you wound up getting an email back completely in the Russian alphabet.
Oh, yeah, completely in the Russian alphabet.
There's like four different characters of the letter A in the Russian alphabet, and I always get very confused because it's like A-A-C-A-A-A-A, and it's like, hello, how are you? And I can't even read it.
They use everything, these like backwards, kind of sideways Vs, and it's, you know. It was very interesting, but I found it was, you know, I couldn't find anybody, and then I found three people that could translate it in like within an hour. So we had multiple translations and kind of picked and choose, and then hopefully what's going to happen now, he said that when he gets back and he gets in the swing of things, we'll have him on the podcast as well. I don't know how well it's going to sound with his English, but we're going to get a go at it anyway.
That would be great.
That would be really cool.
I like how you asked him if he was ready to make the jump to the NHL. Did you ever think he'd say no? No, I'm not ready.
No, you know, honestly, most of those questions you expect kind of you have to ask the questions, but you expect somewhat of a cookie cutter type answer. I thought though, you know, the one thing that I did think is that he seems like a confident guy. You know, this is not someone who says, well, I think I'm ready. I hope to make the team. It's a tough competition. I'm going to give it my best shot. he seems like, you know what, I've been in North America for 2 years. I understand the style of play. I'm comfortable playing it. I had 81 points in 80 games last year. That's a good indicator. You know, I'm ready to go. This is my time. So, I mean, I think that it's been pretty obvious since day one of the summer that he's going to get as good a shot as anybody to make this team, and that they probably have him penciled in as the third line center. But it's good to hear that he's got that confidence as well.
Yeah, definitely. I know all our readers are excited to see him finally get a chance. A lot of people were hoping that the Rangers were going to call him up during the playoffs, maybe trying to provide an offensive spark. And then they did, and he only got about 4 minutes of ice time, or so it seemed.
Yeah, he's been in two games and played about 12, 13 minutes total.
I think there's a long list of guys that Ranger fans are really excited to get a look at once training camp and preseason, and then hopefully in the regular season. And he's right up at the top of the list, along with, you know, the 52 defensive prospects that I mentioned. And we'll see about Evgeny Grachev. Some people think he's ready. Some people think he's not. But I think he'll have to have a hell of a training camp to make the team, but we'll see what happens. But you guys did a great job on Anisimov, and thanks for – we appreciate you sharing it with us.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, and I appreciate you guys linking it up as well. So,
anytime. So, all right. So, like as we promised, we're going to get back into our discussion that we were having last week regarding – some of the Rangers that have played over the years, that just infamous Rangers, guys that weren't so great, or maybe even just some obscure names. We're gonna have to work without Annette tonight because we don't have Mouth, who is our expert on guys like these. And apparently, I don't know, he might not be able to call in. So, but he had some great names last week. Rob Whistle, that was a really, really good one.
Well, Jim, I'll fill in one respect that I've got a hell of a name that I can't believe nobody brought up last week. I can't believe I overlooked it last week. So I don't know. Maybe
you know what's...
Maybe we'll tease it a little bit. Give it a couple minutes before I bust it out.
Okay.
What if I ruin it though? Because I have a knack for that. Because I have a name that I can't believe no one mentioned myself. But
well, I have a couple of names on my list that we just didn't get to. Because we just ran out of time and it went so well and we were all having such a good time with it that I just didn't even mention them. So I'm hoping to get to them tonight. And I'm gonna start this off. And the first name I want to throw out there is, which was one that I was surprised nobody mentioned last week. And then, like I said, we didn't get to it. Kevin Stevens.
Oh, yeah.
Well, cross one off my list.
Yep, cross one off my list as well.
So you guys both had Kevin Stevens.
That was did we not bring that up? Because I was sitting there and I said, I was like, that seems too obvious to have not brought up last week.
Well, you know, I think we were having so much fun with some of the obscure names and some of the stories that are attached to them. That we didn't get around to necessarily just the absolute bums that played for the Rangers, but I didn't want to go another night without forgetting Kevin Stevens. For those of you that have forgotten or tried to forget, or maybe you're a little too young to remember, Kevin Stevens was a true sniper's sniper when he played for the Penguins and with the Kings. And he wound up, I believe it was with the Bruins, and his game had started to kind of fall off, and the Rangers were able to pick him up in a trade. And then during the 2000 season, he was in East St. Louis, Illinois, and he got arrested at a motel, spending his Rangers meal money on prostitutes and crack. And it was actually stolen meal money. It wasn't even his meal money. And so he wound up going into the NHL substance abuse program, and And I think he made a brief comeback with the Flyers, and then he may have even went back to the Penguins.
He did. He played the last 2 years of his career with the Penguins, actually.
Yeah, for one last run, and then it was all over. But Kevin Stevens, hookers and crack, and the New York Rangers, perfect together.
And that was really – that signing – or that trade was one of the beginning of the end for that little Rangers run. I mean, they got him – I think they got him in that first season or before that first season they didn't make the playoffs, right? The 97-98 season. I think he was right after Messier left, they got him. And, he had – with Pittsburgh, he had two back-to-back 100-point, 100-plus-point seasons. And he comes to the Rangers and – it's the beginning of those signing the names, but not the players anymore. I don't think he reached 50 points once with them. So, definitely a bum of epic proportions.
Back to back. I'm looking at his stats here now. Back to back 40 point seasons with the Rangers, and then only played in 38 games in the 99-2000 season before it all went horribly wrong for him. And that was. He was part of the teams that the long stretch where there was no postseasons for the Rangers. He was part of that. So okay. So now that I've ruined both of your lists, I'll turn it over to Joe. And Joe, why don't you give us a name off your list?
Okay, I'm looking through, and I'm going to start off with one that I came up with towards the end of my list looking, and hear me out on this one, because he really wasn't an integral part at all. But you both remember Thomas Pock, right?
Sure.
You remember Thomas Pock always crying that he didn't get enough playing time with the Rangers, and he was supposed to be the next Brian Leetch, and blah, blah, blah. I looked
every
up his numbers
defenseman
with
the Rangers have had since Brian Leetch is supposed to be the next Brian Leetch.
I looked up his stats on the Islanders this season. He put up 3 points in 59 games. And he cried for so long that I deserve a shot. I'm signing this contract because I'm putting up all these numbers in Hartford and blah, blah, blah. I could put up 3 points in 59 games on the Islanders because I'd be the best player on the ice. And for someone to complain so much, get himself put on waivers and get picked up by the Islanders, and to do that just makes me angry.
Makes me very angry.
I don't know if you agree with me, you could disagree with me, but Thomas Pock, and all he did was complain. All you heard about was, I think I can be a more integral part of this team. Well, no, you can't.
You know what, I mean, I'm going to it's hard to argue with you at this point after the season that he had with the Islanders, but I was in agreement with him a lot of the times. It never bothered me when he spoke because I thought he did deserve a shot. I didn't think he was the second coming or anything, but I thought he was certainly serviceable, and especially in those years you heard my thoughts on Jason Strudwick last year. I thought Thomas Pock definitely deserved a shot at that slot at least. When he came up and he got opportunities with the Rangers, the brief opportunities, he was okay. So I guess if you're talking about someone who complained and then didn't really back it up, you can certainly point to him. But at the same time, to put him on the list of worst Rangers, I don't think so. I just don't think he got a fair shake here.
Well, maybe we could trade Redden back to the Islanders and bring back Thomas Pock for another run, and we'll see how it works out for both teams.
I'd sign up for that in a second.
But, yeah, Joe, every defenseman the Rangers have had since Brian Leetch is supposed to be the next Brian Leetch.
Yeah, I'm aware.
okay. All right, Steve. Who do you got on your list besides
Kevin
Stevens?
This is the name here. The guy was not – I don't know how many people will remember him, and he wasn't – he didn't do anything really for the Rangers. He only played 3 seasons in the NHL, 2 of them on the Rangers. But the name itself, how it did not get brought up last week, and we're talking about obscure names. Everybody here remember Pear Juice?
Oh, yeah, there's a good one.
Pear Juice, P-E-R-D-J-O-O-S, Pear Juice.
Yeah. War number 44.
Yep, war number 44 played like 50 games one season with them, and I played like 6 or 7 with them. The next year it was 91-92 and 92-93. But, the guy, I just remember I was young back then, but I remember Pear Juice. That was the funniest thing in the world to me when I heard that name. So
The Rangers, the Rangers got him from Detroit.
Yep.
In March of 1991, he came over with Joey Koser.
Really? You know what? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he came over in the Joey Koser trade. And the funny, this is my pear juice story. The thing that I remember about him is, at the time when he played for the Rangers, which was early 90s, was when Sega Genesis first started with the NHL games from EA Sports. And he was on the Rangers roster on that game, and he was one of the he was one of the best hitters. So I would always have him be the guy that would just be like, you know, you have that one guy that you put on the ice and you just try and knock everybody else over. He was the guy of all people to be like the best hitter. Number 44, pear juice.
Jim, did they have announcing on these games? Because I would have loved to see these announcers trying, you know, the Sega Genesis announcers try and pronounce pear juice.
No, those were before the days of play-by-play on video games. But I just think it's funny that my best memory of pear juice is from a video game and not from not from anything he did on the ice in real life.
My best memory of him is just that I just remember, I mean, I was like five or six when he was on the team, and I remember how funny it was. For some reason, it was just hilarious to me that there were players in the NHL, one was named Pear Juice, and one was named Coffee. I thought that was hilarious. He had drinks.
That is kind of funny. And what it's amazing that this guy had, he had such a great video game
persona
ability, because he played two games in the NHL with the Rangers. Two games. Or no, I'm sorry, that's incorrect. I'm looking at the wrong number. He played 56 games with the Rangers, 21 points in his Ranger career over two seasons. But a much more storied NHL, that was probably NHL PA 92 or 93, that he's a legend in my mind as far as that game is concerned. But Pear Juice, that is a great name. I wish Mouth were here to see that one. Did you hear that one? He would have loved it.
He's sad right now. He just doesn't know why.
when he goes back and listens to our podcast, which I know he always will, he always does, he'll laugh when he hears that one. All right, so now we've come back around to me. I have a name. And again, if you guys want to call in, the number is 646-478-4692. Blue Shirt Banner Radio, we're on Blog Talk Radio, and it's blueshirtbanner.com if you guys want to call in. We're just trying to get through July here. We're talking about some of the not-so-famous Rangers, or as I call them today, the Blue Shirt Banter No-Stars. Just if you have a few names you want to throw out there, by all means, give us a call. And I have – see, a couple of these names I put on my list just specifically to impress the Mouth, because he's not easily impressed. So I don't even know if you guys will remember some of these, but one of them, this falls under the category of obscure, and that would be Dave Silk.
Dave Silk, 1980 Olympics, of course.
That's right. He was with the 1980 U.S. Olympic team that won the gold medal, and he was drafted by the Rangers in 1978 and signed his Ranger contract just a few days after winning the gold medal. And then made his debut, I think, just a week or two later at Madison Square Garden. And I remember my dad still works in New York City. But back in the old days, he was fortunate enough that he had a lot of clients that were able to get him Ranger tickets. So he used to go to a lot of games. And it just seemed like whenever he was able to go, there was always something big happening. He was there for the last game Phil Esposito ever played as a Ranger. And he happened to be there the night Dave Silk made his Ranger debut. And he said they brought him – I remember him telling me the story. He said they brought him out to center ice with his medal on, and they brought the American flag down. They had like a real nice ceremony for him to welcome him to the Rangers. And so that's pretty cool. So, yeah, he played three seasons with the Rangers before he was traded to Boston. And then he kind of bounced around the NHL a little bit and finished his career in West Germany. Most of those guys that played for that 80s Olympic team didn't have a whole lot of success in the NHL. Pavelich was one of it was one that did. He's always the first one that comes to mind for me. Quite a few of those guys wound up playing for the Rangers, mostly because Herb Brooks was the, became the coach in I think it was 1982, and he brought a lot of those Miracle on Ice guys with him. Rob McClanahan was another one that, that played for the U.S. Olympic team and then came, went on to play for the Rangers.
How about Neil Broughton's brother, Paul Broughton, played for the Rangers
Paul Broughton
for a little while.
But was he with the 80 team or the 84 team?
Neil Broughton was with the 80 team. His brother
okay,
was
I think
with the
Paul, 80. I think Paul Broughton was with the 84 team.
Okay, yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, Paul Broughton was not on the 80 team.
Right.
But the story about Dave Silk, actually, you talked about your father. My mother was actually at BU when the in 1980 when they won the Olympics. She was a student at BU, and most of those guys were from BU. And to this day, she always would tell me stories about she said that she dated Dave Silk for a little while. That's why, you know, that's where I know the name from so well. And I was actually at a Ranger game with her a couple of years back, and Dave Silk was at the game, and you know, they put him on the screen, and you know, everybody's clapping in that area above the boards where they have, you know, the Rangers legends that come back. And so I chat, you know, because I always said, you didn't date Dave Silk, like giving her a hard time. I said, all right, well, here's your chance, go up and let's introduce me. And she never did, so I'm still, I don't know if she's telling the truth or not that she dated Dave Silk in college.
That's a great story. One of the other guys from that 1980 Olympic team that went on to a really successful NHL career was Kenny Morrow, although he did it on Long Island, so nobody really paid attention to it. All right, Joe, who's next? Who do you got?
Back to me, back on my list. We touched him briefly at the end, but I feel like he deserves more of hatred, and that's going to be Mike Dunham. Mike Dunham. Is it Mike Dunham, the goalie?
Yeah.
Mike Dunham?
Yeah, Mike Dunham. All right.
Yeah, Mike Dunham.
I have a soft spot in my heart for goaltenders, and when he came to the team, he came off two fantastic seasons in Nashville, and I remember saying to myself, oh, good, here comes a real goaltender who can actually help us. And I know that when they got him, the team was in sort of a downward spiral, but he was so awful for this team, and I would watch him give up goals that I truthfully felt that I could stop. And I don't know about the two of you, but he was there's just a special part in my heart that will always remember Mike Dunham and remember my dream to be a goalie for the New York Rangers, a chance he had and he wasted.
Well, Joe, I agree with you on that point wholeheartedly. I'm glad you brought him up again because I agreed. I thought last time we did not spend enough time ripping this guy to shreds. I think that those Ranger teams were definitely in a downward spiral, but there were a couple of them that if you got competent goaltending, they would have made the playoffs. They would have snuck in. It would have been a 7 or an 8 seed. But he was, I agree with you. There were countless times where I said, put me in there, put my grandmother in there, and those pucks would be stopped. It was really a brutal period of time to watch him in nets, and you know, it was seemingly no light at the end of the tunnel, and now you got a guy in Lundqvist, and every time Lundqvist has one of those game-saving saves, or every time Lundqvist wins a game for the Rangers that they probably shouldn't win, I always reference it and say, that's the type of game that if they had Lundqvist in you know, those Dunham years, they would have won 5 to 10 more games and would have made the playoffs.
And I just want to, I mean, I'm looking at him now. The Rangers traded Rhett Murray, Thomas Buchek, and Marek Zidlicky for Mike Dunham. And obviously out of all those names, because Murray was on, he was at the tail end of his career, I don't know much about Buchek, but Marek Zidlicky, who's still right now one of the better puck-moving defensemen in the game, for a guy who in 2003-2004, in the 57 games he played, he won 16, lost 30 games, had a .303 goals against average and an .896 save percentage.
All right. I'm going to hit you guys with a little trivia question here. Mike Dunham is the answer to a trivia question. Trivia question is, there are three goaltenders that have played for all three of the New York area teams, the Devils, the Islanders, and the Rangers. Can you guys name the other two?
Kevin Weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say
there's
Kevin
one.
Weeks.
There's one.
Can we get a time period here? Can we get an era?
He played in the NHL for a very long time. I want to say at least 15 years. Played for a lot of teams. Started with the I'm not gonna tell you who he started with yet. I mean, that'll make it too easy.
Let's see.
He started. His first team was the Rangers.
First team was the Rangers.
And I don't know. I think everybody's disappeared from the chat room. I'm not getting any answers from the chat room either.
Yeah, I'm pretty stumped on this one.
You know what? I got it. Hold on. Beezer, right?
There you go. John Van Beesbrook.
Beezer.
Was John Van Beesbrook?
Yeah, he played like 10 games or something for the Devils at the end of his career, I think.
Hold on. Let me go grab his – came up with the Rangers until, you know, then he was replaced by Richter. Played his last two seasons were with the Devils. He only played 9 games for them. Seasons.
Yeah, okay.
44 he went from the Islanders to the Devils. 44 games with the Islanders and then 2 years with the Devils and then he retired.
It's a good trivia question. I like that.
So there you go. There's your
trivia. I enjoyed that as well.
Like that? Okay. All right. So, Steve, we're up to you. What do you got on your list?
All right. I'm going to go more recent here, and this is just because this guy was probably the biggest target of just a venomous rampage that I went on the podcast, and that's Mr. Ryan Holwig, a guy who, listen, I think with every season just got worse and worse. He was a nice novelty that first season coming out of the lockout. You know, was upbeat, had a lot of energy, and that's something that we weren't used to seeing as Ranger fans on the team. But as time went on, especially in that last season with the Rangers, he wouldn't play, and then he'd get put on the ice, and if he lasted a shift without hitting someone from behind, it was the shocker of all shockers. And I think when he took that penalty in, game three against the Penguins, that essentially ended the Rangers season 2 years ago. That was it. And I believe my exact words were when I opened the podcast with, "Congratulations, Ryan Holwig, you cost the Rangers the game, the series, the season tonight."
I have a story about Ryan Holwig. I was at a Philadelphia. I have a friend of mine who is a Philadelphia Flyers fan, and I bring him to a Flyers game a year. And I went to a Flyers game, and if you would care to remember, and if you hate Ryan Holwig, you'll definitely remember this game. He scored two goals. In the first period. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, holy crap, this moron is going to get a hat trick. This is like, I am running to the bomb shelter because the apocalypse is clearly imminent. Yeah. And Tom Rennie, in his infinite knowledge, puts Ryan Holwig out on a power play.
Yep.
What does the idiot do? The idiot takes a penalty. The Flyers score on the power play that Holwig gives them, and the Flyers win the game 6-2.
Yep, 6-2.
And that was it was the epic. You know what, Ryan Holwig, you are a moron.
I was at that game too. I was at that game too, Joe. I remember that exact feeling. I was with you. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I thought I was in a dream. And then it was just typical. The guy scores two goals. Might have been his only two of the season at that point. And then pretty much, cost the Rangers the game the rest of the way.
Those were his only two goals of that season.
The beginning. Up to that point.
You need to have a special type of suck to be Ryan Holwig.
Listen, no. At least, that bubblegum gang, that bubblegum band, I never really understood why Mark Stahl was there, because I thought, you got Holwig in there, you got Strudwick in there, you got to bring back a guy like Dale Pierrington or something to round out the doofuses.
Those were his only two goals of that season.
Were they?
Not just, yes, that's it.
I mean, you scored, you know there's problems because, go ahead, Jim.
He scored two goals in the – I'm actually looking at the box score. He scored two goals in the first 7 minutes and 42 seconds of that game, and then he was done for the season. That's it. I'm out. He just kind of smacked his hands together like a blackjack dealer. But you were right. There was a hat trick that night. Let's see how good your memory is. Who got the hat trick that night?
Knubel?
No, but he did score a goal. Very good.
Yeah, he did score a – was it –
I've got the name on the tip of my tongue right now.
The Afro.
Why can't I remember this name right now? I'm blanking.
Scott Hartnell.
Hartnell. All right, I was blanking with the wrong
name. Scott Hartnell.
That wasn't who I was thinking, so I would have gotten it wrong anyway.
I just want to round out the thugs that you said. Didn't Dale Purinton get kicked out of the AHL for gouging out another player's eye?
That he did.
Wasn't there an instant? I mean, you, like, all right, obviously hockey
and
football
are
doing more.
And he also gouged out Cole Moore's eye.
But when you're gouging out a human being's eye,
there
are serious issues that need to be worked out.
The second time he did that. If you remember earlier that season, he gouged out Colt Moore's eye.
Oh, my God. What? I mean, he's in jail. He has to be in jail right now. He has to be in jail. There's no way he isn't.
Agreed 100%.
By the way, one more footnote on Ryan Holwig's career night. He had two shots on goal that night, and both of them went in.
That was probably his only two shots that season, 100% shooting percentage.
No, he shot all the time, but he just missed the net.
Well,
wildly.
That doesn't register as a shot on goal, though. That's my point.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And, you know, I'm just looking at the recap from that game, and that was Lundqvist in goal that night. That was just another bad game he's played against the Flyers.
That was early on in the season, correct?
Yeah,
it was in December because I was on break from school.
All right, so midway.
January.
All right, midway.
Oh, yeah,
January 9th.
I was on break from school.
January 9th. Okay, so... Ryan Holwig, that's a good one. All right, so we're back to me. All right, so I have an obscure name for you. And I don't know if you guys will remember this one. I know Mouth would. Bobby Sheehan. This was a guy, he was a journeyman all his career, and he was with the Rangers AHL team in the 78-79 season. The Rangers called him up right when the playoffs started. And he lit it up in the playoffs. He scored 4 goals, 3 assists in 15 games in the playoffs. And we're talking about a guy who only had 48 career NHL goals in 310 games. So he became quite the folk hero in those playoffs. He was a little small center. I think he was maybe 5'7" or 5'8". And like I said, he played for 8 different teams. He played in the WHA. He was a New York Raider in the WHA, and he was a California Golden Seal.
Yes.
And I think after he left the Rangers, I don't think after those playoffs, I don't think he ever played another game for him. And I honestly, I don't even remember where he went after that. But that was I thought that was a good obscure name. And like I said, that was one of the ones I put on my list specifically for Mouth. But, so I'll have to remind him on that one. This guy doesn't even have his career stats here. here we go. After the Rangers, he bounced around a little bit more in the AHL, came back up with the Colorado Rockies, the LA Kings, and then he was done back with the Whalers of the AHL. And then his career was over in 1982. But, there's my obscure Ranger for you. So Joe, you're up. What do you got? Who's next on your list?
I'm going to give you a name that I don't think was discussed really at all last week, and it surprises me that it wasn't, and I'm going to say Marek Milik. Did we talk about him last week?
No.
Well, I don't think we did.
No, we didn't.
You want to talk about a bad defenseman. Coming out of the lockout, the Rangers signed Marek Milik, and I look at him. He is friggin' huge. He's a giant on skates. And I'm saying to myself, oh, awesome. He's going to be really good. Probably the worst defenseman I've ever seen in my life. It was like when players went up against him, it was like they were stepping into time machines that put them into the prime of their career. He should have wore orange because he was a traffic cone. 90% of the time, he was on the ice. And
yeah, there's, when you're a 6 foot six defenseman, you really don't want to be known for being. And he's known for two things: one, a guy that doesn't play physical, and for scoring a goal between his legs in a shootout. That's not what you want to be known for when you're a 6 foot six defenseman.
And I have a story about him, incidentally enough. I was at a Ranger game with, I don't remember who, I think I was there with my dad, and someone, I don't even remember the team because the moment in time astounded me to the point where I lost my memory. Someone skated into the zone with their head down, and Marek Milik ruined his existence. He crushed him. It was one of those picture-perfect, bone-crushing, like, knocks a guy in the air off his feet, open ice hit. And I'm like, was that Marek Milik? Did Marek Milik just do that? And it just emulated what he could do, but what he never did, ever. And the other thing that makes me mad about him was the playoff game where the Rangers won 7-0. He scored the third goal of that game. I was at the game. He destroyed the puck and scored. And he put his hands in the air like, oh, yeah, I do this all the time. No, Milik, you scored on your own net. He scored 4 game-winning goals in overtime in his own net. Milik would always score in his own net, especially against Pittsburgh. Crosby would pass the puck to Milik, and Milik would finish every time with, like, sniper prolificity.
See, Joe, I'm in the extreme, extreme minority when talking about Marek Milik, and by no means am I thinking that he's a great defenseman or anything like that, but I always thought, if you remember back to that first year, he was actually pretty serviceable for them that first year, and the hatred really came from the fans that second season when, and this is what Ranger fans do, and it's, you know, it's perfectly justified, but when you start to get, you know, that 6 foot six defenseman who's simply not a physical guy, and he wasn't a physical guy, and he wasn't a very mobile guy, but I thought for the most part, And this is, again, it's not excusing it for anything. I thought 95% of the time, 90 to 95% of the time, he made the right decision as a defenseman. But the thing with him was that when he made a mistake, those 5% of times where he made the wrong decision, the 10% of times where he made the wrong decision, it was certain to end up in the Rangers' net. Where other guys make small mistakes and they get away with it and it's not as noticeable, Marek Milik would make one mistake a game that would always end up in the back of his net. And so I thought he got a little bit of a bad rap, but, you know, again, you can make the case too that if you're making one mistake a game that ends up in your net, you're an atrocious defenseman.
Can I also say that he was the only New York Ranger player that I can remember that pissed off Tom Rennie? He was the only player that upset Tom Rennie.
All right, trivia question for you guys here, and I mean, you probably should remember this one, but we're talking about Rangers that we hate, and Marek Milik had that shining moment where he scored the shootout goal, and another Ranger that we hate has scored the goal that kept the Rangers in that shootout. So it was Strudwick, yep. Strudley had that goal. I remember I was actually at that game, and when they tapped Strudwick's shoulder and he came out and they were down one goal in the shootout, I got my jacket and started walking down, figuring that's the end of the game, and he scored, and then Milik with the improbable through the leg. So I think if you're at that game, you're witness that game, that had to be one of the most improbable wins in maybe Rangers history at that point.
That game was against Washington?
Washington.
It was Washington. Did Strudwick keep the puck after he scored the goal?
Strudwick celebrated like he just won the Stanley Cup. He skated, I think, two laps around the ice, and then banged into the boards and screamed like it was like he was a bear. It was one of the funnier celebrations for a shootout tying goal I've ever seen, but. I was as surprised as he was, I guess.
I think that puck's in the Hall of Fame now. all right. I like that. That's a good one. I think we're back to – I think we're over to you, Steve. I think it's yeah. – who else you got? By the way, we got – let me just interject here real quick. We have about 10 minutes to go. If anybody wants to call in. You guys have been slow on the phone calls tonight. I don't know if are the Yankees on or something. Everybody's watching the Yankees or something.
I got that on GameCast right now. 3-0. Job is pitching another one hitter.
Oh, okay. I know the Mets got rained out tonight. I guess that's better for them. So we got about 10 minutes to go. If you guys want to call in, again, the number is 646-478-4692. Give us a couple of names if you want to call in. If not, Steve, who you got?
I'm going to go with, I got a couple left, but I'm going to go with, you guys remember Nathan Lafayette?
Oh, yeah, Nathan Lafayette, the guy that almost tied the game seven.
Yep.
I will never, ever, for as long as I live, forget watching Lafayette shoot that puck and Richter coming across and making that save. And I mean, I hate to keep talking about 1994 because it pisses people off, but whatever, I don't care. You know, the intensity in my living room was at an all-time high. I mean, it was just my brother and I were sitting there watching the game. It was just the two of us that night. It was usually all my brothers were there and my brother-in-law at the time. There were usually five of us. But it was just me and my next oldest brother that night. And we were both, how do we say, a little overserved that night. Which
you're having a good time.
We normally had a strict no drinking rule while the Rangers were on because, you know, we needed to be focused. But that night, there was just too much pressure. We started drinking.
You had to self-medicate that night.
We were heavily self-medicated. Tensions were high. I mean, we weren't saying a word, just praying for time to tick away. And Lafayette shoots that puck, and Sam Rosen at the time screaming at the top of his lungs, "Saved by Richter!" And I really thought I was going to crap my pants at that point. Really, this is it. I'm going to crap my pants. My ex-wife is going to yell at me for messing up the couch. That was just a heart-stopping moment. Then 2 years later, or I guess it was maybe 2 years later, he wound up coming to the Rangers. And I'll tell you a funny Nathan Lafayette story after you go ahead, Steve.
It was just with Lafayette. It was one of those, you know, the Rangers go through these kind of eras, I feel like, where they do a lot of the same thing, where they, you know, they get players that whose names sound good, whose brothers were good, who used to be good. And this was their phase. This was the beginning of their phase that if you played for the Vancouver Canucks in the series in 1994, you signed with the Rangers after that. Sergio Mimesso, Nathan Lafayette, even Jeff Cordinall's brother, Russ Cordinall, was on the team.
Kirk McLean.
So that
Kirk
was
McLean?
Yep, Kirk McLean.
They had half that team.
Yep.
He's on my list, Kirk McLean, but I'm not going to get to him, but he's on my list.
But that was the beginning. I mean, Nathan Lafayette was a nothing player for Vancouver, you know, that season, but it was one of those things that they saw him in that series, and then they pounced.
Somehow, one way or the other, my brother and I, the same brother I watched Game 7 with, my brother Jeff, we got on the conversation a few months back about Nathan Lafayette. I don't know, we were watching maybe a highlight video of the 94 game or something, and we got on the subject of Nathan Lafayette, and I Googled him. And I found he's no longer playing hockey, and injuries cut his career short. And now he sells travel insurance. And I found this website where it was like a travel blog, and somebody had done an interview with him, and it was basically just him telling, you know, the readers all why they needed travel insurance. And I couldn't help but think that if that puck is 6 inches to the left, Nathan Lafayette isn't selling travel insurance today.
That's a great point. Because that puck, actually, while it was announced as saved by Richter and while Ranger fans remember it as this incredible save, the replay show actually hit the post.
It hit the post, and I failed to mention that, but it was the intensity of the moment. Everything happened so fast, and Sam Rosen just screaming at me. And, you know, Sam thought it was that Richter had, because Richter did come across, but the puck did hit the post.
Oh, it looked like an unbelievable glove save, and I think JD caught it right away, actually, if you watch the call. You know, "Saved by Richter!" And then JD says, "No, I think it hit the post," and Sam cuts him right off and keeps going.
Right. Yeah, I think Sam was about to crap his pants as well. But it's like that movie. What's that movie with Jim Belushi? I think it's called Mr. Destiny, where he's the little league player that strikes out, and it ends the game, and his whole life, you know, he winds up just, you know, his whole life, how it affects his whole life. Mm-hmm. And then he meets a guardian angel who shows him what his life would be like if he hit the ball instead of striking out in the Little League game, and he winds up being rich, and he has a beautiful wife, and, you know, it's that whole thing.
It's a great, you know what he would have become to Ranger fans? He would have become the Bucky Dent of hockey.
He would have been Nathan Effin Lafayette.
Yep. Nathan Effin Lafayette.
He would have been the Bucky Dent, the Aaron Boone, you know, that would have been Nathan Lafayette. Now one more question. That if that puck is 6 inches to the left and goes in the net, then he wouldn't have become a Ranger unless Glenn Sather had signed him.
It's a great point. I wouldn't be surprised if Glenn Sather would sign him right now as an insurance agent.
And, you know, speaking of the Canucks that went on to play for the Rangers, that one thing I didn't get to say last week when Paulie D talked about Pavel Bure being the most disappointing Ranger, which is, by the way, if you go back and listen to our podcast from last week, that's one of the funniest moments in radio history. I'll put that up there with anything Howard Stern's ever done. But the thing that always bothered me about Pavel Bure was the fact that the Rangers let him wear number 9. That was the thing that bothered me the most about Pavel Bure's time with the Rangers.
I knew he was hurt.
I knew they were taking a huge risk with him. I thought he was worth the risk. And when it didn't work out, I wasn't disappointed because I kind of expected it. But the thing that always bothered me was that they let him wear number 9. That number belongs to only one person in my mind, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway,
the thing about that too, and I agree with you, that was so disappointing about that is that it's not as if he was wearing number 9 his whole career. He was number 10, and. Who was it, Sandy McCarthy, that blocked the number 10? I think that was it.
Yes.
And so, he wants a number close to number 9, to number 10. You know, don't give it to him. He gets a different number. He gets 8. You know, I agree with you. I was really disappointed when he took number 9. I know he did call Graves, but, Graves is too nice a guy to say anything. He would never have said, no, you can't have that number.
Right, yeah, but the Rangers should have said to him, no, you can't have 9.
Exactly.
There's just, as far as I'm concerned, my generation growing up, there's only one number 9 for the Rangers. There's only one number 11. There's, and although those numbers are retired now, same thing with the Giants. There's only one number 11. There's only one number 56. Nobody else could wear those numbers ever, whether they're retired or not. You could never see anybody else wear those numbers. But anyway, Joe, what do you want to say? We got about 2 minutes to go, by the way.
Can I throw my specialty name out there?
And I apologize. When it comes to number 9, I did forget to mention Andy Bathgate also wore number 9, and it's in the rafters. And a shout out to Scott in the chat room for pointing that out. I did forget that. Andy Bathgate also wore number 9 before Adam Graves. Sorry, back to you, Joe. Go ahead. What'd you have?
I'm gonna throw out my special team very quickly, and it has nothing to do with the Rangers, but we're talking about players we hate, and I just have to bring this human being up. Mike Milbury currently works for Versus, and I have to listen to him that he knows hockey in between every game that the Rangers are on in Versus because I refuse to watch Versus because he's there. I did a little bit of research, and I want to tell you all of the players and prospects he gave up without taking the time to develop them, and I'm going to go really quick.
It's the funniest list ever.
Oscar Chizzi, Zdeno Chara, Roberto Luongo, Jokinen, Trevor Linden, Spezza. He passed up on Danny Heatley and Gabrick in the draft, Matthew Schneider, Tim Colley, Brian McCabe, Rafi Torres, Zygmunt Palfy, and Brian Smolinski. And that is the quick list that I compiled.
Very nice.
It's one of the great incompetencies in all of sports.
For someone who claims they know hockey, he's just a moron.
Yeah, he's a horrible GM. The only, like I told Mouth one night, Mike Milbury, the one person that will never forget Mike Milbury is the Ranger fan who got beaten with his own shoe by Milbury.
Yeah, he brings it up all the time because it's his only success in life.
Pretty much. All right, guys, we got like 40 seconds to go, so we're gonna wrap this up. Steve from NYRangersCast.com, I want to thank you for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Of you, anytime. You're welcome anytime you want to come on. Make sure, if you're not looking at Steve's site on a daily basis, make sure you do. Again, it's nyrangerscast.com. Also, we want to give a shout-out to rangercrisis.com, The Mouth. He does great work. Beyond the Blue Shirts, Blue Seat Blogs, that's our own Dave Shapiro. That's his site. He does great work over there. And don't forget Ryan over at the Manic Ranger. Make sure you're checking out his site on a daily basis as well. Guys, we're going to do this again next week, and we might have a special guest, a surprise we're working on. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We ran out of time.
Yeah, Steve, I'm going to shoot you. Steve, I have a question for you, but I'm going to ask you over email. So
all right,
if you could just wait like 5 minutes online, I'm going to send it to you.
You got it. And Jim.
You want
Jim
me to
there?
Give you a call?
You know what? Let's figure out. I'm not going to be able to talk that long. I got to go somewhere at about 9:15. So we could either try it tonight, or I'm going to be, the thing is, tomorrow night I'm actually going into the city to cover this Chris Higgins thing.
Joe's going to that too.
That's what I was going to ask.
I was going to say, should we meet up?
Yeah, you know what? Shoot me an email and I'll stay online and we'll figure it out tomorrow, but I'm going to be there. So, Jim, the thing, I do really want to talk. I'm heading to D.C. this weekend. I will be back next week. Can I maybe shoot you an email? Let's choose a time that we can really, you know, sit down and talk about things for a little bit.
Sure. Sounds good.
Does that work? Okay. All right. I appreciate it. All right, guys. I had a great time. And, I'll stay online. And, Joe, just shoot me that email, and I'll talk to you guys soon. All right?
Okay.
All right.
All right. Talk to you later.
Yep.
Bye.